Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is the Shame Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. I'm so glad to be on the air tonight. I actually was without power and without telephone for a couple of days there, running off the generator. It's so nice not to be listening to that motor. Just kept the sound of the wind blowing through the trees up here. My good friend, Tracy Morrow, is joining me tonight. And, you know, if you read her description of mine, there's just a lot of similarities here. She's a certified relationship coach, and she specializes in conflict resolution, intimacy, and energy psychology. That one, I don't have a clue what energy psychology is, so we're going to ask her about that a little bit. She has worked with couples for quite some time, and in the recent years, she started focusing on how to maintain and enhance and rejuvenate long-term relationships, also another area that I'm specializing in. That includes sexual health and libido and intimacy and romance. And all of that comes together in a brand new book that she has called Plateful of Passion. Now, I got to tell you, the cover of this book is so cute. There's a blonde in nothing but an apron and a red bra holding a skillet. So, Tracy, I want to know, is that you on the cover of your book?
Oh, hi, Veronica. No, that is actually Shelby Loveland, who was gracious enough to donate the picture of herself. My face is on the back cover.
Also cute. Okay, very attractive. I don't know how cute it is because you're sitting there, you're not wearing a bra. What's up with that? Okay, so you let somebody else do the sexy pose.
Yeah.
How did I do on the bio?
Wonderful. That's pretty much it.
Well, before we dive into your recipe book here, what is energy psychology?
Energy psychology is more of a holistic approach. It encompasses different techniques that somebody can do when they're out of balance, if they're holding a lot of stress in their body. It includes tapping procedures, different positive thinking practices, some techniques like that when you're stuck with different, whether it's past trauma or working on pain management, that sort of thing.
Well, you mentioned tapping, and I've been seeing a lot of that on the web lately. Mm-hmm. I've actually tried a little bit of it. I didn't notice any particular benefits. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about tapping and maybe where I went wrong?
Well, I think that it you have to know the right areas to tap, obviously, and they follow acupuncture. But instead of using a needle, which a lot of people just don't like those needles or the idea of them, you're tapping on the acupressure points. And that makes it a little more effective if you know the correct area of where you're tapping. And also, it's not going to work for everybody.
Oh, is it?
No.
Oh,
no.
Interesting. Okay. And
it's not a guaranteed cure-all. But for the people that it does work for, I've seen people go from maybe you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, their headache might be an 8. And after going through a tapping sequence a couple times, it'll take it down to a 3 or 4.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so results perhaps a little commensurate with biofeedback.
Exactly.
Hmm. Great. Hmm. Okay. So, let's see, are you a therapist or?
I'm a coach. I'm a coach. I don't have a sociology degree or psychology degree.
Right. Well, I don't know about you, but I kind of think we're headed in the direction where people are preferring coaching just because oftentimes it's more targeted and it's more of a short-term plan.
Absolutely, yes. Usually, you know, in the first session or two, we can come up with some pretty good suggestions and talk through things where in therapy, you know, it does take quite a bit longer.
I remember I've gotten a lot of good out of therapy, actually, and I do have a degree in psychology, and I should have one in sociology, but I didn't declare a double major. So it's not that I don't value those things, but I certainly know that one day I woke up after 4 years of being with the same therapist and realized she was just pulling a check off of me. We weren't actually doing anything. It was just a very expensive friendship. So I have to admit, I usually, when I think about the dollars spent and the time invested in coaching, I've gotten, usually it's tangible. The results mm-hmm. are tangible. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think that therapy definitely has a huge value, especially with, if you're dealing with something, mental disorders or addictions or something where that ongoing relationship with a therapist is very important to maintain. But with coaching is usually, you know, hey, I have this issue, whether it's, you know, I don't know what to do with my career, or I don't know what to do with my partner, or, you know, it fixes specific things and fixes them, and they're done, and you can move on and do other things.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I said pretty much the exact same thing to somebody else today. You and I seem like we're always kind of in on the same wavelength there. So conflict resolution is something that you and I both specialize in, and I'd love to hear a little bit about what your approach is for that when you're working with couples.
When I'm working with couples, conflict resolution is I usually start a kind of an inner holistic approach, because each person sees the conflict as something totally different. Each person wants, actually, what is amazing to me is most people want the same things, and in a couple, unless it's, you know, I don't want to move and he wants to move, but usually when it comes to the inner relationship, they both want love, they both want closeness, but the way they're going about it and the language that they're speaking to each other is so foreign that they don't realize they're probably saying the same thing.
Yes, I've seen that so many times. I often characterize it as being just a hair's breadth from the success that they're both looking for. And
yes.
Yet, so thoroughly entrenched in the whole concept of winning and losing. You know, somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. And then, of course, the fact that we got to figure out who's right and who's wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we never get to the good stuff. So do you incorporate things like nonviolent communication, or do you have a particular technique that you teach couples?
Well, in my first book, it talks about the golden keys to relationship, and while I think that communication techniques are important, it's important to know good communication skills, I think that if the focus is too much on the words that you're saying and the words that you're using, it's a lot of couples just, they don't get the results as quickly because they're trying to, you know, learn this new technique where if you go back to the basics, you know, how are you treating each other? You know, are you being loving? Are you being respectful? Are you looking at your partner as somebody that's valuable in your life? How are you valuing them?
That's a really good point.
Because if you can go back to that, then a lot of times you don't need the communication.
Well, now, diving into your book here, I'm looking on page 73. We've got eggs. The egg is the ultimate fertility symbol.
Yes.
It's believed that the egg contains the ultimate gift of virility straight from the gods. So, in Iran, brides and grooms exchange eggs. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And in France, a bride broke an egg when she first entered her new home. That's in the 17th century France. In Egypt, eggs were hung in the temples to encourage fertility. Where do you find all this information?
Years of research. Yeah, I spent about 2 or 3 years researching every different sort of food I could think of, going back into the history of the food, any kind of traditions that went along with the foods, the chemical compositions. It was really a fascinating journey. I find it, with April coming up and Easter coming up pretty soon and the colored Easter eggs,
mm-hmm.
and how most of your fertility rites from back in, you know, since time began were usually around the springtime, it seems auspicious that we ended up using Easter eggs as a celebrant.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's more than coincidence, but then almost every Christian holiday is some adaptation of a pagan holiday, and almost all the pagan holidays were really about fertility. I'm noticing in your book that you've got, you're saying it, you know, the assumption, of course, is that we're talking about chicken eggs, but in fact, you also recommend caviar is having some of the same benefits as chicken eggs as far as health goes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
The protein and zinc and iron and all the things that it don't sound real sexy, but do some great things for your body that help create a more sexual, you know, the stamina and energy are there. And caviar is sexy to eat. It's fun.
Well, it's certainly associated with that, isn't it? I have to say, for myself, I've never really developed a taste for it. I've had quite a bit of it in various different flavors, and it's just it's so salty. But we should also mention, although I don't see any mention of this in your book, but I just want to mention that if you are going to get chicken eggs, please get cage-free ones. Because here in California, at least, we've recently passed legislation that's not going to take effect for a few years, but of trying to treat our farm animals a little more humanely so that they at least have room to stand up and stretch. And I think if the chicken is happy, the egg's probably going to be healthier. At least that's how it was for me when I was growing up on the farm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And if you think about it, you are what you eat.
You are, and you don't want to eat. You don't want to eat misery.
No.
So, cardamom. Do you want to tell us about cardamom?
Cardamom is probably one of the most expensive spices. It is one of the more powerful spices for aphrodisiac effects.
Now, you see here, it has a peculiar effect of cooling the body when it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And warming it when it's cold. Just very interesting. How is that possible, I wonder?
I think it's the mix of the different oils that it has in it. because it has like a eucalyptal or minty sort of a chemical in it, which would be the cooling. Mm-hmm. But then it also has the camphor kind of chemicals in it, which would be the warming. Now, how does it know when to warm and when to cool you? I have no idea, but it can be an amazing thing.
And apparently the Vikings discovered it about 1,000 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had to wonder what they were sitting around doing way back in the ages when they were discovering all these different foods. Was it like a truth or dare? I dare you to eat this and see if you die or not.
Yeah, we'll all watch. We'll all watch. Cleopatra used it in her baths.
Mm-hmm.
So she cool herself and warm herself at the same time.
I've never tried it in a bath. I have tried the cardamom fudge, and I've also used it for a few other recipes, and it's succulent. It's very delicious.
I usually associate it with Middle Eastern food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Arabian Nights makes frequent reference to it in this context, and the context being good mood, enhanced sexual excitement, which makes it a popular ingredient in many love potions. Now, do people still do love potions?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sure you could Google them and buy them on the internet from just about everyone.
Do any of them actually work?
Love potions work from the ingredients and the way they affect your body, and it also has a lot to do with your emotional state. I mean, if you think about it, chocolate is probably the number one most popular, well-known aphrodisiac. And it may not be known as an aphrodisiac, but, I mean, it's, you know, Valentine's Day, what do? You buy chocolate. So the chocolate, the chemicals in it act as an antidepressant.
Right.
They actually increase those chemicals that you get when you're first falling in love with somebody. So they have all of those ingredients. But, you know, if you're having a really shitty day, a little bit of chocolate might help you feel better, but it might not, you know, have you falling head over heels in love with your mate and ready to crawl into bed again. So even with the aphrodisiacs, there has to be other things that go into play. So you can't just mix up a love potion and give it to your intended and you know, it's going to work. There has to be, you know, the chemistry involved. There has to be other things surrounding that potion.
Well, speaking of popular aphrodisiacs, belladonna is considered dangerous. Is this true?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a poison. Too much of it could lead to death, really.
And yet, in your book, you reference that witches sometimes use it in a wine to make a powerful love drink. Why mm-hmm. is that?
Well, it's a poison, and it affects you. You know, it will affect your mental capacity. It might leave you feeling woozy. It might leave you feeling very relaxed, you know, if it's just a teeny tiny bit of it. And if you're relaxed, then you might be a little bit more conducive to being plied with someone's intentions.
A dangerous way to get somebody drunk and in the mood.
Kind of like a really bad roofie.
Okay, a bad roofie. Now, this one surprised me. Basil is a wonderful aphrodisiac.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how's that? I've never heard of basil being an aphrodisiac.
Oh, yeah, the smell alone is known to increase feelings of lust. It started back in, oh boy, I'm trying to think. It was years ago. It's called Kiss Me,
Kiss Me Nicholas.
Yes.
Yeah, which is used in many love spells focused on love, relationships, and sexuality. And in Italy, sweet basil is called Kiss Me Nicholas, or, mm-hmm. boy, I have no grasp of Italian here, but it looks like Bacia Nicola or something like that.
It is Bacia Nicola.
Bacia
is kiss.
Kiss.
Yes.
Bacia. Bacia Nicola. Sounds much better in Italian. So that's basil? Basil.
That's basil, yeah.
Wow. So I hear it's associated with the Haitian love goddess. What was this? Urzuli,
yes.
Urzuli. Mm-hmm. Urzuli, the Haitian love goddess. Never knew they had one. Known for her beauty, sweetness, love, and sensuality. And the smell of basil was thought to drive men crazy with lust. Oh, my God, women would dust dry basil powder on their bodies to become more attractive.
It has a very sweet smell. Mm-hmm. I've never personally dusted basil on myself.
You have?
But I know when I... No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't.
No, but I use it in cooking a lot. And when I cook, a lot of times with the spices, I'll add the spices just on the top and allow them to simmer, and that helps create more of an aroma until you mix them in, and then it affects more of the taste. But the vitamin K, calcium, magnesium's a huge energy increaser and a mood lifter. In fact, if you suffer from SAD at all, which is seasonal affective disorder,
uh-huh.
magnesium is a wonderful supplement to keep on hand because it helps boost your mood a little bit, gives you a little bit of what you would be getting if you could be in the sun. So it has all those wonderful ingredients
in
it.
Oh, and the Greeks used to serve basil to their horses during the breeding season.
Yes. They believe
so it works for horses too. This is cute too. It's used in a pot on the windowsill to signal a lover in Italy. Put a pot of basil outside your window to tell your lover to come on over.
Yeah. I'm ready, honey.
I'm ready. The basil is on the on the windowsill. So, bananas. Now, obviously, that's kind of got a phallic shape to it.
Mm-hmm.
But are you suggesting that there's some aphrodisiac quality about the banana itself, like eating it, or are we just talking about using it as an original sex toy?
Oh, now that works too. frozen bananas. You know, food can be so sexy in itself. There's so much you can do with it. Feed each other. Bananas are, I think, the perfect food. If you had nothing else to survive on, bananas would be wonderful. They have protein. They affect your chemistry level, kind of in ways that chocolate does.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you... carbs and energy, and there's just so many
things. It also affects
ways
your serotonin levels.
Oh, yes.
Yep. Which is what chocolate does as well.
And if you've ever artistically eaten a banana in front of your lover,
yeah.
Sometimes just you don't even have to feed it to them. Eat it yourself and play with it.
I plead guilty. I have done that.
So have I.
Well, what do you got here? Honey-dripped mango and avocado slices.
Doesn't that sound delectable?
It really does. Honey-dripped mango and avocado slices. Yeah, let's see. We've got two of each large, chilled, seeded, and peeled avocados and mangoes. Cayenne pepper and salt to taste, 3/4 cup of Greek-style plain yogurt, juice of 2 large limes, 1/4 cup of honey, and mint sprigs for garnish. That does sound delicious.
Yes. Very refreshing in the summertime. The honey gives you a pretty much immediate boost of energy, and the fruit gives you more sustainable energy. And that's really fun to feed each other as well.
Arginine? Are you serious?
Arginine.
Arginine is an amino acid.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that affect your libido?
Let me find that.
That's like a supplement, right? I mean, it's contained in foods.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you put that in a recipe?
Well, let's see. You would choose whichever food was high in arginine.
Uh-huh.
And this is something, especially if you're dealing with maybe some erectile dysfunction, not to the point where you need to go to the doctor yet, but maybe, you know, if there's been a lot of stress or just one of those slumps and you want to try to perk things up a little bit, you want to look for foods that are going to help increase blood flow. And so getting foods rich in arginine is going to help it quite a bit. So nuts are great. Chickpeas are pretty high in arginine. Your dairy products, beef, pork, poultry. So if you're trying to stay away from a meat diet, but you do eat meat, that might be, you know, be a good idea to increase the uptake just a little bit for a while. And then if you don't, there's always your seafoods. Any kind of seafood is going to have a good supply of arginine in it. Wheat germ, you know, sprinkle it on your food. There's, you know, quite a bit. I would say just keep the bowls of nuts laying around and munch on those a lot.
Keep a bowl of nuts to munch on if you want to make sure your nuts work right, huh?
Exactly. Nuts for nuts.
So, wow. So this is interesting. So you're not just talking about spices and foods here and recipes, but also health.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's see. What is this? Is it aniseed or?
Yes.
Aniseed, which is, where do you find that?
You can get that pretty much any grocery store, or you can get it online. I get a lot of different spices online or at Whole Foods if I want to make the trip over to the east side because they have some very high quality.
They do.
Absolutely, yes.
A lot of organic
stuff. Yes. Yeah, and that helps. I mean, if you're... You do spend a little bit extra, but and especially with spices, if you get the higher quality spices, you don't need to use as much, and they're so much healthier and flavorful. So spending that extra buck on a higher quality is going to be better, you know.
Well, and it sounds like if you had the whole seeds, it would be a good thing. Do they grind it, or is it just in a seed form?
You can get it both ways.
Both ways, yep.
Yeah.
So
it's extremely, I don't know if pungent's the right word. It has a very licorice taste. So when you use that, you don't want to use a lot, or you'll totally overflavor the foods. But just a little bit can be really nice.
It's also known as sweet cumin.
Yes.
Okay, and it's so here it says that it's been used as an aphrodisiac since the Greeks and the Romans, who believed that aniseed had special powers. Sucking on the seeds is said to increase your desire. It includes estrogenic compounds, which are female hormones, of course, and works the same in men, including inducing similar effects of testosterone.
Yes, and it helps make your breath smell better.
Your breath,
which is
yes.
always a little sexy.
Right. Let's see. The ancient Romans thought that the plant promoted better sleep, and apparently large quantities can act kind of like a narcotic.
Yes, without the effects of belladonna. You won't kill anybody.
I guess the belladonna can actually cause you to not be able to breathe.
Yeah.
So you must have researched this book for a long time.
Years, yeah.
Years. Well, tell us a little bit about that, your personal journey. What sent you in search of foods and spices that might turn people on?
Well, I'm married. I think that everything that you do to your body affects how you respond in a sexual way. And so we all eat. Everybody eats food. And food has such a huge effect on us. And a lot of times we don't eat, we're not mindful of what we eat most of the time. You know, we go through the fast food lines, we go, we just don't pay attention. And that can really have an effect on your energy level, on your libido, on your moods. So everybody talks about, take this newest drug. What's the 5-hour energy, which I have nothing against getting a quick boost if you need it, but do you really need to go to that length, or is it something that you can do that's healthy? The pills scare me. And I'm all for taking medication if you need it. If you have severe erectile dysfunction or different sexual dysfunctions where you need to seek a doctor's help, by all means do so. Follow a doctor's prescriptions. Try the meds. Those can be extremely helpful. But if it's just that, I just haven't been feeling it very much lately, so I'm going to try this newest Viagra-type drug, or I'm going to try that. That's you're putting chemicals into your body, and you're not quite sure exactly what the long-term effects are going to be. So what can you do instead of, running to grab the bottle, just with your own diet? And it's more fun, You get to cook with your lover if you want to cook with them, if you want to cook for them. So it's just a combination of all those different things that I started to just kind of play around and research my own favorite foods and what, my husband and I like to eat a lot. Is this really healthy for us? Why is it healthy? How can it affect us, sexually and together? And it kind of went from there. And kind of one food and one recipe at a time. And I really had no intention of creating a book out of it until I received some peer pressure from people that were really starting to enjoy the information.
Well, I think you're right about that people are always looking for quick fixes to their sex life. And as you know, when we're trying to teach people how to communicate in a way that's producing less conflict and more connection. That takes time and it takes work, but the long-term benefits are certainly, they far exceed some of the quick fixes that you could employ.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the same is true of health. You sometimes might have to take a medication, but if there's any way that you can evoke, an improvement in your health by eating your way there... you get so many other fringe benefits. So not only could you be focusing on trying to improve your sex life, but you could be extending your life in general.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So jalapeno peppers are sexy.
Yes.
Say
if
more.
You can handle the heat.
They can handle the heat. Well, say more about that, please.
Just because of the spice, the chemical or the fluids that are in the jalapeno pepper that give it the spicy effect also really increase your blood flow. It gets your oxygen going. It increases your blood pressure, not in an unhealthy way, but just in a nice way. It kind of gives you a little bit of a rush, I guess.
Mm. Yes. Plus, you mentioned that they have a sexy shape.
Yes.
In some ways, with all the sweating and the increased heart rate, and the blood flow, kind of reminds me of Viagra. If you've ever
seen
somebody on Viagra where they're sweating and all red in the face, and are you okay? Are you going to die?
Well, Viagra, the jalapeno will actually, it helps your heart. It's a heart-healthy food. And I'm not sure if Viagra really has that kind of benefit to
it. I think it's a risk.
Yeah, and I've never heard anybody having to go to the ER from having an erection.
A four-hour erection?
Yeah.
A four-hour erection. So, I know you also work with couples around their sexuality. What do you tell people about Viagra, or do you?
If it's a case where they've tried everything else, I'll suggest that they go to a doctor, really, first. But with couples, if they're not satisfied with their sex life, the first thing I look at is how are they relating to each other? You know, are they holding on to resentments? What's going on in their relationship? If everything's good between them, you know, everything's loving, they're not fighting, everything's great, but the libido's just not there, then I go to the next step. You know, let's look at at each person's health in the relationship. There's certain times where women just aren't as inclined to feel sexual, you know, immediately after childbirth.
Right.
So, you know, are there instances like that are going on that might be something to work with to help, get back into a better physical state for men, for women too, but especially for men, stress really affects the libido. So there's so many things to look at before you just grab a pill.
Absolutely. You know what? We got to ask you about the horny goat weed.
Now, that is a supplement that it's actually an herb. It's natural. It grows. Some sheep herder discovered it up in the mountains when he was herding his sheep, and he noticed that when the sheep would eat it, they would get very horny.
Oh, so that's why it's the horny goat weed.
That's exactly why it's called horny goat weed.
Simple. There's no real mystery here. The goat ate it, and it got horny.
Yeah.
So it's horny goat weed.
Yeah. And
there's,
also,
there's another name here, Yin Yang. What is it? Yin Yang Hua or something like that.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of a sexier name, I think, than horny goat weed. But then that actually comes in a supplement form, like vitamin supplements.
And they've been using this for, like, over 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, it's healthy. It doesn't have, side effects that the man-made drugs might have. But it gives you a little bit of a boost if you really need that little bit of a boost.
And this is considered the reigning king of herbal sexual enhancement aids.
Mm-hmm.
So, over things like Cialis? Because Cialis is herbal.
Cialis, a lot of them are very popular now because they're new and people like to try that new thing. But I think that people should, try a couple different things. Try the horny goat weed. You know, try the Cialis, see what works the best. I definitely recommend trying to stay all natural when possible.
Yeah, obviously. So, but look at here. It's got some possible side effects such as dizziness, dry mouth, nausea, thirsty.
Yes.
Okay, so how do you avoid that?
Take small doses.
Yeah.
And if you find out that you have
the side effects. How common are those side effects?
Not very common. I mean, unless you're taking, you know, an overkill amount of them, you probably won't. Unless you have, if you have food allergies, this is a food to pay attention to.
So it tends to be something that a lot of people are allergic to?
I wouldn't say a lot of people. More people are probably allergic to peanuts or, you know, different foods like that. But it could affect you.
Huh.
So you start small, try it out. The people that use it often use it and love it. And then some people, they're going to find that it doesn't work for them. And that's okay, and that's how we're made up.
Kind of like the tapping, huh?
Exactly, yeah. People are so individual. I mean, what works for one person doesn't always work for somebody else. So that's where you move on and try to find something that's going to work better. You know, some people can't stand jalapenos. You know, they're too hot, and other people love them and don't understand why, you know, they're not in every food in the world.
Right.
I think there's a jalapeno ice cream, as a matter of fact.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right about that. So ginseng and garlic, those are a couple of really common, you know, foods
mm-hmm.
that your book is listing as popular aphrodisiacs. Can you tell us a little bit about the ginseng?
Yeah, they didn't try that one out on goats.
Okay.
this is probably one of the most popular ones and the most well-known. I mean, ginseng supplements, you can find them everywhere. It goes in a, you can use it in a lot of different foods. And it has a lot of different, I would say it's like the natural health food form of caffeine on certain levels. Maybe not as much as guarana.
Uh-huh.
But it gives that, it gives the energy lifting boost without the crash, kind of like that 5-hour energy
right.
drink or vitamin B drink. But it really hits your nervous system, too.
Yeah, but it's something here, Korean red ginseng actually improved erectile function
mm-hmm.
More so than the placebo, so it was a significant difference between that and the placebo. So, And they're thinking maybe it's the phytoestrogens that are having an effect on the human libido?
Yes, that's what they believe.
So a little more than just an energy boost there.
Oh, yeah.
And then what about garlic? You want to tell us about garlic?
If you're going to eat it, make sure that you both eat it. Otherwise, you will smell it on each other.
Yeah, obviously.
garlic is kind of a wonder drug like a banana. It has so many healing properties in it, and it is extremely healthy for your heart. It's also another, it stimulates nitrous oxide, which is one of the mechanisms of an erection, so it helps give a stronger erection.
So, and the Egyptians were worshiping garlic, apparently. But
yeah, so it worked very well for them.
They put clay models of garlic bulbs in Tutankhamun's tomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very interesting. And cured 22 common ailments, including lack of stamina. Oh, and they fed garlic to the slaves when they were building the pyramids.
To help keep their strength up.
Right. And they used it as currency. So this is almost a history class.
It is. I think it's very interesting to know, you know, how food played out in history.
That's one thing that is a little unexpected side benefit of this book. I've got to say, I thought it was just going to be recipes and maybe with, you know, some idea about the health benefits. But you've actually included some historical, you know, tidbits almost on everything here, even raspberries, something as common as raspberries here. You go all the way back to 1737.
Yeah, I think that you know what your family history is, or your partner's family history, or just different traditions that you have. If you know a little bit about the history of the different foods, it can really add a little bit of extra ambiance. It can also give you something very interesting to talk about over your meal.
Well. Yeah, you would think that something as mundane as a potato would not have an interesting sexual significance. But here it is in your book, Potatoes.
Yeah.
So, do you want to expound on that a little bit? What is sexy about a potato?
You know, to look at a potato, it could be sexy, but I think that it has to do with, again, how it affects your body when you're eating it, maybe how you're preparing it. I know that just the different vitamins and minerals and energy. It was actually worshipped by the Incas, which is interesting. I would think that they would be more worshipped by the Irish, which I'm
right.
When I think of potatoes, I think of Irish, and I am Irish, so there's. Yeah, I can relate to that.
Right, right. It's a great potato famine, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you think of new potatoes in creamy sauce, I mean, they could be very sexy that way.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, you recommend a baked potato served with sour cream and melted butter. Sounds like a heart attack in the making there, but... an extravagant delight, serve praline sweet potatoes or sweet potato pie.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I believe in everything in moderation. A baked potato with a little bit of real sour cream and real butter, in moderation, every once in a while is going to be okay.
What's some of the feedback you're getting about this? Are couples that you work with starting to use the cookbook and having like some good results in their relationship or in the bedroom?
Oh, absolutely! They love it. They love it. They enjoy. Some of them are beginning to cook together where they never cooked together, and just the activity around the food. The preparation, the thinking of, you know, what menu items are we going to get and what do we want them to get? And they can kind of look through the book and, you know, oh, look, honey, this one's supposed to be really good for your penis. Let's try that out. Or one of the things, and this amazes me because I know I've researched it and I understand what I read, but how it works exactly. You know, you hear a lot of talk about pheromones, and you can go to the store and you can buy so many colognes that carry pheromones and how it's a sexual attractant. Well, just eat a lot of celery. If men eat celery for some reason, and they can try it, and I encourage this for single men, not the married men, but for a single man, eat some celery and go to a nightclub. And chances are the women are going to be more drawn to you than if you hadn't have ate the celery.
Where are you getting this research? I've never heard of such a thing.
I know. The way that it interacts in your body, and then, you know, when a man sweats or just, you know, it releases that scent, and for some reason, women are drawn to that scent more than if they had used some pheromone cologne that's too strong.
Well, now, reading about it here in your book, it says that it stimulates the pituitary gland, but which, of course, releases the sexual hormones. But what is this, I guess it's androsterone? A male hormone that's actually in the salivary? Am I reading that right?
Yes. Food has tons of hormones in it that are, either estrogenic for women or have male hormones in it.
Could you carry some celery around? Would a woman get turned on just being around a stalk of celery?
Well, what do you intend to do with that stalk of celery?
I knew you were going to go there. But aside from how we could turn the celery into a sex toy, seriously, do you have to eat it?
I think it's the way that it interacts with other hormones in your body, kind of like an ingredient and not the whole main course.
Well, this is actually kind of disappointing news, because how many men do you know that sit around and chomp on celery?
Well, celery seed is the most potent, and that can be added into so many different things.
Okay.
Salads and soup. I mean, heck, you could sprinkle it on a sandwich if you wanted to.
Because I was going to say, women, of course, chew on celery all day long when they're trying to diet. But I was like trying to envision a bunch of guys standing around chewing on celery.
No, only if it's put into stews or...
Yeah, right. Oh, but here, the Ukrainian woman serves her man a celery to keep him strong and virile.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And then a 1990s TV program about millennium babies recommended that couples eat plenty of celery to ensure they didn't miss the deadline.
Eat your celery.
So, seriously, Tracy, in the couple minutes we got left here, I'm just wondering, how did you research this book? Did you just go through and find some historical significance for every single food a human being could eat?
I think so.
So long to research this book, you don't really have any idea how you put it together, do you?
Little by little. I know I hit, the internet, and then if I would hit the internet, I would have to look at, okay, is this a good resource? Because there's so much mumbo-jumbo out there. So then I would go to the medical journals. So then I would go to this place, and then this place. And like I said, it took years. And I really... other than just being curious and probably having too much time on my hands, I really had no intention of putting it together in a book. But then when I started making suggestions to some of the couples that I work with, and, oh, try this, and, oh, did you know that, and just having a point of conversation, and other people were so interested, I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to look at this a little more. And it grew like that until it was finally a book.
Well, it's, like I said, it's a very interesting little book about the history of food and vitamins and spices. So it's full of lots of surprises. So tell our listeners how they can get their own copy.
They can go to Amazon.com. It's available at Amazon.com. And just type in plate full of passion. And as somebody suggested to me, make sure that you tell people that plateful is one word.
Plateful. Playful. Yes,
Playful of passions.
Playful of passions. Tracy Morrow, thank you so much for being in the Shame-Free Zone.
And, well, thank you for inviting me.
And this has been your history of food. And I enjoyed learning all this stuff. I probably won't be able to eat a stalk of celery with a straight face ever again.
Good. You can think of me every celery stalk.
That's right. I will. And that pretty well wraps up the Shame-Free Zone for our listeners. I just want to let you know I'll be back here Monday as long as there's no more power outages. And my guest next week is the president of Athena's Home Novelties. So be sure and tune in. We're going to be talking about sex toys, the regular kind, not the food kind. Okay. That's it from the Shame-Free Zone for tonight. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.